Welcome to another special episode of Atlanta's only pro-business radio talk show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Buckhead inside the Business Radio X studios.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Jeff Sheehan with the Sales Influencers Radio Show. I'm joined today by a really special guest, Mr. Chris Conlon, a gentleman who I've known for well over three decades now. It seems like yesterday I met him, but I had the privilege of working with him for many years, and I consider him one of the consummate professionals in the sales and marketing arena. Organization-wise, I can't think of a better guy. So, Chris, without further ado, I'd like to have you introduce yourself and talk about a little about your background, what you're doing, and just so exciting, some of the things you have going on, working with angels, working with some new inventions, and what have you. So, please go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you this afternoon and be on the Sales Influencers Radio Show, and appreciate the opportunity with Business Radio X as well. So, yep, we have known each other for about 32 years, I think it is, 32 or 33 years, so there's something to be said for longevity, I believe. Well, I'll give you a little bit of background. I started out in marketing and sales initially as a product line manager. It wasn't really in my area of education. I was educated as a structural engineer and served in that field for about 3 or 4 years, but made the switch over to the electronics industry in the late 1970s. Started out as a product line manager, which I call the strategic side of the business, if you would. Product line manager management is closely aligned with marketing, and of course, that's the strategic side, as the sales is the more tactical side. From there, I became a division general manager with a Japanese company that's had a headquarters for the Americas here in the Atlanta area. And I became familiar with new product development and marketing of highly technical products in an entrepreneurial type of way. These were new products that were being brought to market, brand new technologies, which the Japanese had some influence over. Began to work with distribution channels and different channels, such as sales reps and independent manufacturers' representatives, to sell the product and even evangelize, if you would, the product line. Began to recognize that there were really three primary functions that have to be conquered or understood thoroughly for you to advance in management, particularly on the marketing and sales side. You, of course, have to understand the marketing and sales process, the strategic as well as the tactical issues that are involved. But also, you need to understand the operations side. There's nothing worse for a salesperson than to actually achieve a sale and then have the operations or a part of the organization not be able to support that. So I learned that fairly early in my career. And then the last critical piece, the third, if you would, is the financial piece. You know, how do we make money and sustain the organization? From that division general manager, I left the Japanese company and went to work for a small company in the Dallas, Texas area. And that company was somewhat constrained in terms of resources available and still in the electronics and wireless industry, specializing in filter technology. And we managed to take our limited resources and redirect them to a certain extent in building out the sales channel internationally. We brought people in Europe. We established a sales office in Asia. And you know, timing has a lot to do with success. And in this case, our timing was very good in the fact that we were able to roll out some products that were being used by the automotive industry in North America into the Asian market and some of the more consumer-oriented products, particularly in the early cell phones. So we had some good success there. And then I was recruited to a company out of New England, which was in the semiconductor industry. I spent some time with Alpha Industries, and that was quite an eye-opening experience in terms of my responsibility as Vice President of Marketing and Sales. The firm was primarily a military-oriented, program management-oriented organization, and I was brought in to try to, shift them to more of a commercial focus, which we succeeded in doing because, again, timing has a lot to do with success. And at that particular time, the company Alpha Industries was realizing some success with switch semiconductors, gallium arsenide switches, in a cellular phone application with, at that time, Motorola. And we managed to leverage that and expand into other cell phone and infrastructure accounts, such as Ericsson, Nokia, and a few others, played off of that initial success. On the sales side, in that particular circumstance with Alpha Industries, which, by the way, later went on to become Skyworks, we had a challenge in that the sales orientation was one of program management with particularly military customers. And of course, the commercial side has completely different requirements. We did manage to put in an independent sales rep organization. We established a customer service group internally. And we also set up a global account management system, which I think we can talk a little bit more in detail about later on. But that global account management system helped to really catapult the organization into a higher level of revenue, number one, and I'll call it organizational sophistication. If you would, we went through a stage in organizational development where clearly the company had stabilized and perhaps was even declining because military spending was on the downswing to one of a high growth orientation. So we, in effect, changed the culture of the organization as well as the stages of development. From there, I became I was recruited back to my old organization, a Japanese company, and recruited to take over a division as president and CEO of a power supply company. There we had full functionality. We had sales and marketing, of course. We also had finance, operations, and engineering were the primary functions. It was a turnaround situation. We did manage, again, the luck of the timing. We did manage to turn it around in about 18 months from a significant loss position to one of sustained profitability. So family and I decided it's time to get off airplanes. We, in effect, completed our three-year contract with Murata at that time, and I got involved with startups here in the Atlanta area out of ATDC and also in the angel community, Atlanta Technology Angels, where we get to take a look at young companies that are primarily coming out of Georgia Tech, although we entertain subscription deals throughout the country. So, that's been quite exciting. I've got my own startup right now. It's called Coach's Studio. And we are involved in a sports training device, primarily targeting baseball and softball players, youth through college age and eventually into the major leagues.
Well, I think you highlighted something, Chris, that's quite significant. We're both certainly the same age, age-wise. And the thing is, a lot of us, people that are involved in sales and marketing with major corporations, end up becoming entrepreneurs, involved in startup situations, and applying all the sales and marketing knowledge we had over the years to these particular endeavors, advising others. It's a lot of fun, quite honestly. And I know that you have a great deal of passion for what you're doing now in advising these others. Your involvement in the angel community certainly be commended. And I think you're having the time of your life in a lot of respects.
We are. It's definitely a much more relaxing environment. I think it, to a certain degree, although we are somewhat up there in age, it helps keeps us young and involved as well. There's a lot of brilliant engineers out there, brilliant entrepreneurs that are just now embarking on the start of their careers. Wonderful ideas. They're leveraging, of course, current technology, primarily social media, in order to evangelize their businesses. So it's an exciting time, both from an angel perspective and even from a individual startup perspective.
And you know what's interesting, too, is based upon our experience levels, we've seen so much and experienced so much. We were privy to situations where things that people were trying to implement had occurred years ago. We had already tried that. And so therefore, you know, with our experience levels, we can really be of great value to so many companies out there in telling them what works and what doesn't work. And we talked about before the meeting here today, the concept of account-based management, and how I cringe at that thought because of the fact that it's been around forever. We both were involved in that area. We know all about, and you alluded to the fact that at Alpha Industries, which is now Skyworks, which is the darling of Wall Street, that you implemented a strategic account management program, or account-based management program, as known by some today. So it's not new. It's just a repackaging of the old Jell-O brand or whatever brand it might be into a different format. So we've seen so much of this. It's nice to be able to look, take a step back and say, been there, done that. Here are the things I want to advise you to do and not to do, so we can guide them in that respect.
You're absolutely right, Jeff. Part of it is the experience. Part of it is the scars that also we have, because we have made mistakes throughout our career.
Absolutely.
I know I certainly have.
Yes.
And we've learned from those mistakes. So I can recall that you mentioned account management and the repackaging of that approach today. I can recall back in the mid-1980s when I was with a Japanese company, we developed a technique in North America called base targeting and potential accounts, BTP, if you would. And in effect, this was the early precursor to global account management within the organization. We had definitions as to what a base account was, what a targeted account was, and what a potential account was, even to the point of not even profiling the customer in that regard, but we also identified the channel that we would use in order to pursue the different BT or P account. So that worked very effectively. We had some rough times in developing that and defining that approach. But I think overall, it acted as a foundation for a successful global account management system. And we did manage to transfer that type of an approach over to Alpha Industries, which you mentioned has become Skyworks. And they were very successful with it, particularly with the likes of a Motorola and Ericsson. And in today's environment, it's, of course, the large Cupertino company and also companies like Samsung. So that global account management, whether it's a Miller Hyman approach that's been around for many, many decades, or whether it's a repackaged approach, I think the basic fundamentals are the same. It's a matter of knowing your customer, knowing your market, understanding what the organizational needs are, and then approaching those needs in a way that you are identifying the motivators within the organizations that can affect change and make decisions.
Correct. And then going in and have a systematic review of what you're doing in that particular area, on a quarterly or semi-annual basis, and determine who's going to move within that respective structure under the BTP umbrella from one juncture to another. So you really focus your corporate resources from a sales perspective on those particular accounts that are going to provide you with the greatest ROI either today or in the future. So you might, in a lot of cases we saw, we would align ourselves with who we perceive to be future technology leaders and would really pay close attention to them. Even though they weren't going to be generating revenues today, we figured 2-3 years out, they would produce significant revenues for the firm. So we honed in on them and really focused our activities on them. And I'm sure you did the same at Alpha, now, which is now Skyworks.
Absolutely. We had simply had to focus resources, one, because of the transition that we were going through from a military to a more commercial orientation, but also at the same time, we were going through acquisitions, we were developing joint ventures with critical technology companies that offered higher value for our product, and we really moved Alpha and Skyworks from a company that was primarily a semiconductor component type organization to one that is today the leading front-end module manufacturer in the world. So the critical component of that global account management approach, at least from my perspective, is I'll call them the quarterback in the organization. That one individual that can take the various disciplines of the organization, whether it's the marketing strategic side, whether it's the operations side, the finance, or the senior most management, in the case of the president of the organization, and use those resources in a balanced and sometimes unbalanced manner to penetrate the customer and determine their needs and affect the sales, closing the sale. That's very critical. That quarterback needs to understand their own organization as well as they hope to understand the customer. But how you focus those resources, again, are different. Going back to the BTP, base target, and potential accounts, of course, you're surrounding those base customers with all of the resources of the organization. You want the CEO to know the CEO. We did that successfully at Murata, and that success was carried over at Skyworks and Alpha Industries as well.
I think you have a great point there, though, about the quarterback. But I think most teams in business, and certainly both of us experienced this, having two quarterbacks within an organization is somewhat difficult in a lot of cases, where you have a head of sales, you have a head of marketing, and they seem tend to butt heads at certain times. And a lot of organizations, if you have that and you don't have a quarterback who's overseeing those operations of both sales and marketing, it can be very, very trying for organization. Wouldn't you agree with that, Chris?
Absolutely, I would agree. In my case, when I was with Alpha Industries and later with the power supply division of Murata, I had the advantage of having both marketing and sales reporting into me. So in effect, I was the ultimate arbitrator. However, there's a natural disconnect between the two. Marketing is strategic. I've always thought in terms of marketing being very strategic in nature. Sales is more tactical. Feet on the street. What do I do today after I've woke up and had my third cup of coffee in order to affect the sale? It's necessary for them to work closely together. Today, in today's environment, marketing, the definition of marketing has been modified a little bit. Today, marketing revolves a lot around generating leads for the salespeople to act upon. Those leads aren't necessarily an effective way to go about growing the business, in my opinion. They're important. They're certainly a tool in the quiver, an arrow in the quiver, if you would. But it's only one of the pieces of the puzzle that has to be effectively managed. So you're right. I mean, the account management, the entire account management concept depends upon teamwork, focus, and a strong coordination internally among various functions, particularly the marketing strategic side. So communication is in everything is critical.
Without question. But it was interesting what we observed, particularly several decades ago, with the conflicts between marketing and sales and how certain organizations win versus another. And I think it's ongoing out there in the business world. And it's difficult to get around unless you have a really strong leader that can say, hey, guys, step back. This is the way it has to be run.
Strong leadership is critical. If you look at the successful companies, whether it's what I call hardware, where they're building actual physical product, or whether it's software and services, you generally have at the head of successful companies a very strong leader, or at the very least, a strong management leadership team. So, however, leadership changes from what I've found depending upon the stage in organizational development that company might be in. The work that I do these days with young startup companies, in general, they are very highly technically focused. Technical competence is off the charts. However, sometimes the business side, outside of the financial, because most startup companies have good financial advisors, but the nuts and bolts of marketing strategy, the nuts and bolts of the tactical side, sales side, the nuts and bolts of operations, how do you actually build a physical product or develop a physical software package or other factors and services, it may not be as clearly understood as the technical side. And, I can't tell you the number of engineers who have great ideas who simply don't have an understanding of why a customer or a targeted customer can't see clearly the advantages of technology. And that's where the sales and the marketing side comes in. What's the strategy to approach this particular market segment? And then how do you go about finalizing the sale? That's very critical.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll develop the products and they'll think there's a home for them. Unfortunately, there's no home. Or the homes, there are only three houses that'll buy the product, okay?
You're right.
For use in their particular facilities. So you develop something, you think it's a great idea, but you haven't done your market analysis or you don't have your sales channels set up to sell the product. And it's often not.
And these days, it's a much more complex environment. It's the person-to-person relationship contact is still very critical and very important. However, increasingly, particularly in products that are nearing commoditization stage, you find yourself in an auction environment on the internet competing with other firms offering similar products or services. And that takes the personal relationship out of it to a large degree. So the channels are different. The competitive environment is different. And the speed is incredible these days. Many companies continue to act in a very slow, I'll call it a slow manner, but the speed of new technology companies, again, whether it's software, services, or hardware, is incredibly fast. They move from zero revenue, great idea, a technical product that they've applied for a couple of patents on, to millions of dollars, tens of millions, and in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue within a very short period of time, 18 months to 2 years. So the speed is accelerating, if nothing else.
Which I think really calls, particularly with there's so many products out there being so-called commodities now, that unless you have the infrastructure in place to support those products from a computer IT perspective, then very, very difficult for you to compete in this day and age. So you really have to structure it. It also has to be mobile ready. So because the fact that now as the millennials move into more and more purchasing assignments, they're so in tune with mobiles that you have to have the instantaneous approach. So it's available in their mobiles so that they can look at a potential purchasing decision right then and there on their handheld device. So it's changed completely.
Completely. The availability of different software tools to provide data and information to help decision makers, is the scope is almost beyond comprehension today. Something personal that happened to me a while back, I finally decided to, about a month ago, upgrade my nearly four-year-old smartphone, and contacted my service provider and talked to them about upgrading my phone, which I was eligible for. But they had data going back on me to the late 1980s. They indicated that, oh, Mr. Conlin, you were one of the early subscribers to the Motorola flip phone, the MicroTac. Which I found to be quite impressive once I reflected on that. The fact that they have this data going back a couple of decades now and can analyze how I use the device and also the decisions that I made on upgrading over the years. So I'm happy with my upgraded phone, and I'm somewhat, I think, enlightened in terms of the data available to almost every company, whether it's through Google or proprietary in-house databases, to analyze and understand the customer better.
So it's critical. I think if you're a salesperson now or a marketing person, you really need to hone in on that data, analyze it, and then be prepared prior to any meeting so you actually have a great understanding of who or what the customer's needs are, what their background has been with regard to the use of the data or the use of the product in the past, and where they might be going in the future. If you don't do it, you're going to be lost.
Absolutely. That brings up even a more critical role for marketing to play in how they access this data and how they use this data to set the strategies in place for promoting their products and services. You know, there's a host of sales tools out there, whether it's software programs to track individual activities or whether it's an account management type of program. We mentioned Miller Heiman probably being one of the more prevalent and well-known. But there's also factors that personally I've used successfully to build that team that we were talking about earlier. In working with young companies, generally the CEO or the senior management is quick to identify a need within the organization as they transition to a different stage. They might recognize, hey, we've been successful at penetrating accounts on the tactical side, so the sales side is pretty strong within the company, but I need some help strategically in order to identify the market channels and understand segmentation of the market. And there, what we've encouraged companies to do is to clearly write what we'll call a job description. And there's many different HR acronyms that could be used here. But clearly describe what the expectations are and the type of experience required. And then match that to what I call personality profiling. And that helps strengthen the candidates that are eventually selected to perform that role or fulfill that role. So things such as personality profiling, at least for me, has played a key role in building those sales and marketing organizations. Now, that, again, varies by the stage of development. If you have a more mature organization or maybe one that's in decline and has to revitalize itself, well, the candidates for a marketing role or a sales role are going to be significantly different than a startup organization, a lean and mean type of startup organization. But in general, you've got to have the right job description to attack the needs of the organization, regardless the stage of growth that you might be in, and then match that candidate to that job need effectively. And there's tools today, and really they've been around for a good 20 years or so, perhaps more, that will help you affect that.
Chris, maybe could you give us an example of something you did in that regard, a particular position?
Absolutely. We had a opportunity at a power supply company to fulfill a global account management role. This was a highly technical sell. We were building very complex power supplies for the likes of Cisco, HP, server farms primarily. And we had a need for a global account manager, but one that had a high degree of technical skills, but to simplify a description, I'll call him a failed engineer, an engineer who understood the technical aspects, but maybe had a little bit more of an engaging and outgoing personality that they could naturally be drawn to a sales type of environment. I recall going in and working with the HR department in order to refine the job description, and then used an outside service, Caliper, out of the Carolinas, to, in effect, screen candidates. And it was very reasonably priced. And we honed a group of about 30 different candidates down to two, and we ended up selecting, we couldn't have lost on either of these candidates, but we ended up selecting what we felt was a stronger one. And that individual went on to have great success in penetrating primarily new accounts. Again, he wasn't a failed engineer. The individual had design engineering experience with power supplies, but had a very engaging, outgoing personality that matched perfectly with the profile. So that's an example of how we used it.
Yeah, and I think that's something that probably a lot of sales managers don't take into consideration, is where are they on the sales life cycle, the product life cycle, the company life cycle, and trying to fit those salespeople with each one of those junctures within that. It's something that I don't think many people pay much attention to.
And it's critical to team building. You know, salespeople in general are unique animals. They are, none of them that I'm aware of, or I've not met one yet, that wants to be measured in any regard. They are highly motivated generally by the financial aspects of sales. And, you know, that's a matter of structuring the right environment to motivate them, number one. But just as importantly, 1A is to measure their performance. Salespeople don't like to be measured. They don't like to be quantified. And yet, from a marketing perspective and from an overall organization perspective, it's critical that measurement criteria be defined in order to define the correct strategies and approach to the market and, of course, achieve the financial success. What I've seen works in terms of sales measurement is, first off, targets that have been mutually defined between sales, marketing, as an example. I can recall, Jeff, the company that we were with, Murata, we used to bring sales and marketing, the strategy and tactical side, together on at least an annual basis for 3, 4, 5 day meetings to hash out individual account and product line strategies and what the expected revenues were. And then we would measure the performance from both a P&L point of view in terms of product management, marketing, and also in terms of revenue growth and bookings for the sales side. And that was very effective. We had quantitative information that we could judge individuals' performance on. And, of course, there were always factors outside of your control. If a company, a targeted account went belly up or had a legal issue, then, of course.
And there were always those sandbaggers. Remember the sandbaggers?
Sandbaggers exist.
I think every organization has a sandbagger, one or two, at least within there.
Oh, at least.
Yes.
Frankly, I've been a sandbagger in my career. So
okay.
It's a certain degree, it's natural. When you see the dollar signs hanging out there, you want to try to position yourself in a way that you're going to achieve the most you possibly can.
Right. But I think it's incumbent upon an organization to keep sandbagging to a minimum, Chris, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, what doesn't work is when those sandbaggers have the opportunity to set independent goals independent of the organization. You know, the organization has to identify specifically what the expectations are. And those independent bookings versus revenue type of top or even top-down type of dictated numbers generally don't work.
Well, what was interesting in our case is the numbers that were actually forecasting that, at the end of the day, the numbers in the reality were pretty close.
Absolutely. They were close. You know, I attribute that to a couple different things. One, we had an extremely strong leader. The president of the organization in North America was on the board of Japan. He was a Japanese national. He's very forward-thinking in terms of tools, methods, management practices. So I think we benefited from that to a certain degree. Second, we were very prepared, and that's something I've tried to carry forward in my career with Skyworks, Alpha Industries, with the startup I'm with now. In terms of preparing effectively for success, again, what is the strategy? Have we done the necessary analysis in terms of market segmentation to set a strategy in place that can be executed by a sales team? So that piece is critical. The better the planning, the better, of course, the outcome and chances for success. And as you mentioned, Jeff, it's natural for those numbers to coincide at some point. And they ended up being very close in most cases.
Yes, absolutely, without question. So the whole process is well worth it for any organization to consider, is if they have a marketing organization and a sales organization, the two work together to formulate a forecast for your organization, iron out the numbers. What is marketing seeing with regard to, it might be a particular product line or overall? And what are the salespeople seeing with regard to their accounts, with regard to the distributors, with regard to the respective areas? And create that synergistic approach to the overall outcome. And I think that the numbers that they realize will be pretty close and quite beneficial to the organization. There won't be any pie in the sky figures out there. You might have a few disruptive numbers here and there, but they're going to be few and far between.
They are. You know, it's important from, again, an overall management perspective. If you're sitting in the big seat, the C-level seat or president seat, then you have to take a look at meeting certain stakeholder expectations. And it's critical that you have a realistic business plan, one that is well-grounded, and that you have a effective strategy in place and approach through the sales channel in order to achieve that set of goals. But it's also as important to establish what I'll call stretch goals. You've got to have opportunities over and above the current business that either you're taking market share from your competitors or you're expanding the scope of your own organization by penetrating new markets, by perhaps modifying product lines or services. That's very critical to achieving continued and sustained growth. Once you stop growing, in effect, you begin to wither and die. So it's important to any organization.
Well, the other thing is important with regard to sales concern, Chris, is having all your eggs in one basket or having too large a percentage of your eggs in one basket. Because, in fact, you never know when you're going to be on the outside looking in at that particular company, if there's a change in management, any type of inflection point with an organization, you can be caught with trying to make up all kinds of revenue overnight because of the fact that you've put so much emphasis on one particular account, one particular industry. as soon as you achieve that relative cash inflow from that business, you need to start looking at other opportunities that can supplement what you're doing with any one particular company.
Good point, Jeff. I'm working with a company right now. I can't name their name, but they have a very narrow product line, a product niche, if you would, and it's targeted on filter technology, and it's potentially disruptive in wireless communications. However, again, it's a technically oriented organization, a very high competence level in terms of the technology, and perhaps not as thorough or complete an understanding of the business side and what motivates the customer in the market to make decisions to adopt their technology. Because of their narrow focus, they have a competitive disadvantage structurally in what services, products that they can offer the customer. They're up against very large competitors that have a very wide product scope. They've got deep financial pockets. So despite the fact that it's a disruptive technology, because of the stage of growth they're in organizational development, they have significant challenges ahead of them. It definitely benefits an organization to have a very wide scope of services and products that they can offer to a end target market segment as well as a specific customer.
Right. And yeah, again, it's something I think is very, very critical. So one of the things we're talking about, Chris, offline was the future with regard to B2B sales and sales in general. And what is going to happen? I mean, we're undergoing a real transformation with regard to the buyer's journey, the amount of information that's out there really available for buyers. It's not like it was 10, 20 years ago at all.
It's not like it was last week.
No, true. I mean, it changes almost on a daily basis with regard to what new tools are out there. And so what do you think is going to happen in the future? What do you see the future? And you alluded to a Harvard Business School case study or article that you had read some time ago with regard to that. You want to let our listeners know about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. The that Harvard Business Review article, I think it was entitled The Secret to Smarter Sales. It goes back a couple years now, but it's, I think, hits the nail on the head in terms of how the many aspects of the approach remain the same. As an example, know your customer. Absolutely, that has to be continued. Use all available resources within the organization and be responsive. All those factors that have been important in the past continue to be important in the future. But in terms of matching the global account management approach to, if you would, the current methodology of sales and utilizing social media as an example, the targeted audience within a customer is changing, and the Harvard Business Review article points this out. In the past, a lot of focus has been, from a global account management point of view, to identify a coach within the organization, someone to guide you through the organization. Well, that's changed a bit today. One, because the customer is more prepared in many cases. Either if they're buying a commoditized product, they are very well prepared and they are going through the internet and auction type of an approach. Or if it's a unique set of products or a unique set of services, they are preparing an RFP, a request for a proposal, that is much more thorough and in-depth than it ever has been before. So the customer is better prepared when they come to a sales type of meeting in order to understand and know their requirements, and they don't have to do quite as much, if you would, reflection internally on identifying their needs. So from a global account management point of view, that opportunity to act as the educator, if you would, within the customer's organization is almost removed today. Access to information is universal. Individual within a company can go and Google almost anything and identify information and meet their information requirements almost instantaneously. Well, that global account manager today has to focus more on what we call, in the Harvard Business Review article calls, mobilizers, individuals within companies that can truly have a call to action within the organization and get things done. It goes beyond coaching. do they have the internal contacts and the value within the organization that they are influencing internal decisions? And again, as business continues to accelerate in terms of decision-making and the activities associated with the strategic side and the tactical side, it's necessary to find those mobilizers. You don't necessarily need an advocate anymore. Advocates are great historically. Having a champion on your side or a coach on your side certainly isn't a detriment. But if that coach or champion isn't an influencer internally and someone who can mobilize the necessary resources to attend the meeting, make the decision, allocate the necessary resources, then really a global account manager is wasting their time. Another factor is what we've kind of skirted around a little bit is the availability of social media. Who today hasn't checked their Facebook page? If you haven't done it yet today, I'm sure you're going to by the end of the day, so I know I will. It's a great way to stay in communication. We're looking, as an example, with the startup I have today, Coaches Studio, we're looking to build a program using Facebook, using other social media tools, in order to drive revenue to our website and product lines. So it's a different sales technique than existed just even 5-8 years ago.
Well, it all ties in. I mean, what you just alluded to ties into this whole social selling concept. So utilizing these tools, say LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever it might be, any of the social media tools, to come up with those lists of those potential influencers, those individuals within an organization are going to help drive the business for you. And making sure that you're covering those individuals, developing the relationships with them, and communicating with them throughout, whether it's content, face-to-face meetings, phone calls, or whatever it might be, to foster those relationships to benefit your sales, and not going the route as so many did in the past to have some type of coach within an organization, because of the fact that there's so many decision makers on any one particular piece of business. If you look at the B2B sector, Chris, where you and I have spent so many years, basically people are scared to death to make decisions with regard to any major purchases, because of the fact that if they make the wrong decision, then it might be their neck, okay? They might be out there looking for a new work. So what they do is it's all decision by committee in a lot of cases. So you have to find those influences and those people within there, mobilizers, as you alluded to, that help to facilitate that. How will these decisions made collectively, and ascertain that through some of these social media tools?
That is the method that's being used in a lot of organizations, and some of them carry it to their detriment. Some of them never truly end up making the decision, or if it is, it's by committee and it happens to be the lowest common denominator of the decision rather than the highest common denominator. And that's a problem. I see that within mature organizations that I work with. Generally, again, the more successful ones have a very strong leader that listens effectively, asks for input, provides different scenarios that have to be considered within the organization, but ends up making the decision and being forceful about it. So that's critical. That decision by committee rarely ever results in success. It's a challenge.
No, I totally agree with you. Well, we're kind of running out of time here today, I believe. It's been a real pleasure having Chris Conlon on with us this afternoon. And I think that Chris certainly demonstrates the fact that you can really apply years and years of experience and education to solving problems, whether they're in the electronics industry, the high-tech industry of one another, or even in some new industries such as the sports industry. So, Chris, maybe you want to, if you could, just tell us how you're applying the experience now to the latest invention that you're working on, and how it's going to benefit, your experience is going to benefit the marketing and sales of that product.
Well, it came about through a relationship. My son plays baseball at a fairly high level, a good pitcher, And I met a grandfather of another son on his team who happened to have an invention that he wanted help with. He wanted to help in one patenting it. And I recall a conversation we had about 18 months ago now where he asked me if I had any contacts in Asia where he could help have this thing made. And the more we delved into it, the more I saw this as a significant opportunity that I could not only contribute in from my experience, because it is, again, marketing strategy, channel development, sales development, and also operations side. So, and it's a heck of a lot of fun in a sport that I really love, baseball. So it's, I don't know if you saw the Hall of Fame induction ceremony with John Smoltz this past weekend, but John mentioned that Tommy John surgery is a major concern, and he cautioned parents on not overburdening your children and trying to play baseball 365 days a year. Well, that plays exactly to the product that we have, Throwing Buddy by Coach's Studio.
Why don't you tell us about the Throwing Buddy? I mean, it's quite unique.
It is unique. It's a fairly simple, straightforward idea. We hope to have our website, coachesstudio.net, up and running within the next couple of weeks. But the product is being built right now. We have a patent that we've applied for. And it's basically a device that fits over your arm and allows you to throw anytime, anywhere. You use a real baseball. It's a self-contained device. You don't have to be with an individual to catch the ball. But it helps in terms of training, proper mechanics, education, proper mechanics again. But it's also a rehabilitative tool that if you do have an injury and you need to measure your performance over time as to how you're gaining strength, then this is something that you can use anytime, anywhere, throw anytime, anywhere. I've also got to give a little positive accolade to Georgia Tech Research Institute or Research Organization. We've been working with them to build sensors into the device, and we have a proof of concept that we've affected, and I expect to be carrying that to the next level over the next year or so and commercialize that sensorized version where you'll be able to tell rotation, speed, things of that nature. That will appeal more toward the colleges and hopefully Major League Baseball. So we agree with John Smoltz. The kids don't have to throw 365 days a year, but perhaps the 100 days a year they throw, we'd like them throwing with Throwing Buddy.
Right. And what's interesting, though, I you have such a passion for it. I really love it. And I think it's going to revolutionize a lot of the baseball, what's going on with regard to the training and that. But I think it's what you're now doing is indicative of how people can make a transition from working with some of the world's largest, either for or with some of the world's largest organizations, into something that you have a real passion for. You're paying back with your experience level and everything else with regard to creating new demand in that for some new products out there. So it's really, you need to be commended for what you've been able to do in that regard and making that transition, Chris.
Well, thanks. You know, I think in terms of what George Burns says, you know, you can't help getting older, but you don't have to get old. Okay, so this is a way of trying to stay involved and stay young. I want to thank you, Jeff. Right. I've enjoyed working with you over these 30-plus years. I've enjoyed this opportunity to work with Business Radio X and Sales Influencers Radio.
Yeah, could you tell people how they get in touch with you, Chris? If they want to learn more about the new product, or if they want to learn how to get in touch with you with regard to some of your coaching collaboration services in the sales and marketing arena?
Well, probably the easiest way is just a direct contact. I'll put out my phone number here. My cell number is 770-331-3338. I've had it for a couple of decades now. But also, as I say, our website will be up in about 2 weeks or so, and that's going to be coachesstudio.net. So please take a look at us, and we can be contacted in that regard.
Well, again, thank you very much, Chris. It's been a real pleasure. The time has really flown by, and it's been really enjoyable.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.